The Wall Street Journal said he's one of the most innovative minds in football.
He's a rat.
ESPN once called him the guru of the spread.
Scumbag.
Football Scoop labeled him the mastermind behind college football's number one offense.
Nobody likes him, not even his family.
He took three separate teams over a five-year period and made each a top-10 offense.
Yeah, but he's such a horse's ass. He was fired by future United States Senator Tommy Tuberville in the middle of the season, even though he had a 5-2 record.
No wonder CBS Sports said there's never been quite a coach like Franklin. He marches to a different beat.
Pariah, an outcast, a person or animal that is despised, shunned, or avoided. Warning, buckle up and put your big boy pants on. This isn't your friendly kiss-ass coach's show. If you can't handle the truth, eject immediately.
And now, from parts unknown, it's the Pigskin Pariah. The one, the only, Coach Tony Franklin.
Sunday night, September the 12th. Where are we in college football after 2 weeks? Thoughts that I've got. I finished up watching the rest of the games from yesterday, from Saturday. Observations, final observations of the final games that weren't quite finished, and some key analysis of the most important thing in making a championship run at whatever level it is that you have. Those are our thoughts going into today. The first thing is that USC and Stanford game, which was late night. I was used to those games when I coached out at Cal. It's always an unusual thing where you sit and you watch football all day long when you're coaching in the Pac-12, waiting for your game to finally play. If you've got an 8 o'clock game out on the West Coast, it's 11 o'clock back on the East Coast. It can really be a long day. As I sat and waited for that game, trying to stay awake and keeping up with all the things that were going on, the one thing that I had said last week was I didn't believe USC was very good, and I didn't believe Stanford was very good. So when you have two teams that are not very good, most everybody will automatically then just pick which team has the best name recognition. And right now, USC has been the better name recognition, and a lot of it is based simply off of a bunch of guys in sports announcing that have made Graham Harrell the next great, going to be head coach somewhere in the world. And so when they build up a program like that based on that, then they tend to forget to really, truly in-depth analyze. And so for me, as I watch, my job is to give you a different analysis. It's to give you an analysis based on what somebody that spent their life in this watches college film, and then makes a determination on who's real and who's not real, who's good, who's not good. If somebody is bad, why are they bad? And so my analysis in watching USC on week one was that they very simply don't have very good players when you're talking about top 20 football players. They don't have them. And so the only thing that USC has going for it is their name, USC. Stanford didn't look very good against Kansas State. So when they go into that game, to me, it's really a toss-up game. And so we keep up with both these teams because they're in our rivalry series, USC for Notre Dame, USC for UCLA, and Stanford for the big game with Cal. So what's the analysis after watching these two play? Stanford wins the game. Ugly game. USC still not very good. Stanford got a little bit better from the week before, but neither one of those teams are going to be in the talk for breaking into the national championship series of having any chance at all. And as bad as I hate to say it, it doesn't look good in the future for USC. It looks like one of those seasons where they still may win 6, 7, 8 games because there's a lot of really bad teams in the Pac-12. So they may be better than some of the bad teams, but they're just simply not good enough to make a run for a championship at all. And Stanford, on the other hand, they'll get a little bit better every week, but they're the same. They're not good enough talent-wise, not good enough physicality-wise to be there. So that's what I got from that game. Huge thing at the end of the early afternoon games, and that was the Florida State-Jacksonville State game. Florida State should never lose to Jacksonville State, no matter what. Jacksonville State had been blown out by UAB. UAB got blowed out by Georgia. So we have Florida State is back into the talk of we're back, we're a good team anymore. Well, we kind of knew when Notre Dame struggled big time against Toledo. So we knew that Notre Dame wasn't that good. And then all of a sudden we get into this game and Jacksonville State's got a quarterback issue now, and that's never good. And so they go into the game, and or Florida State rather, they go into the game against a team that they're not going to be excited to play against. Jacksonville State's going to be excited to play against them. Jacksonville State's got a really good coach in John Gross, and John's done good stuff since he's been there. And he goes down there. Their kids are more excited to play. And then they end up with a chance to win the game on the last play of the game. Now, in my coaching career, I've been beat on Hail Marys before. So I understand what it's like to lose on a 50-yard field goal. I understand what it's like to use on a 60-yard bomb. But the one thing I've not seen is the way that Florida State played the last play of the game. It did not make any sense at all. They didn't try to play it like a Hail Mary knockdown. They didn't have enough people to rally to the ball. A guy catches a ball. One guy misses a tackle. And he walks into the end zone untouched. You just don't see that. And you shouldn't see that. And they got problems. And obviously, they're going to be addressing those problems this week, because anytime a team like Florida State can lose to a team like Jacksonville State, you got to go back and say, we got something wrong and it ain't all the players. Because the players, when you watch the film, are not that bad. The players are good enough that if they're all in it together, if they're all playing hard, they're not going to have a problem with a team like Jacksonville State. So it's going to be interesting to watch that. We don't have either one of those teams in our series. But anytime the name of Florida State is involved in something, you need to at least acknowledge it. The other thing that we talked about, Oregon State was going to play late that night, and they're in the rivalry series with Oregon. And the first game of the season, Oregon State played Purdue. The offense was terrible. And for whatever reason, Chance Nolan didn't start the game, came in the fourth quarter against Purdue, gave him a chance. And I made a comment that if they didn't start him against Hawaii, something's wrong. Well, they did start him against Hawaii. He lit it up, played a phenomenal game, and they blew out Hawaii. So what does all that mean? I've always believed that Oregon State is a really well-schemed team. Those guys do a really good job with game plan and scheme. But you got to have good players. Chance Nolan is a good player. I talked to you about that before. I coached Chance. I recruited Chance. He's a really good football player, and he gives them a chance because he can also run. He's got a gunslinger mentality. He's not afraid, and he'll make plays. So I think that as good as Oregon played against Ohio State, which we've already talked about, I said that Oregon would probably, if they played them now, if the quarterback didn't play well, Oregon State would have a chance to only lose by two or three touchdowns. Now with Chance playing, if he keeps playing well, Oregon playing the way they are, Oregon's still going to win by two or three touchdowns unless they turn the ball over four or five times in that game. So that takes me into the major topic for going into this week. As you look at your team and you look at your all the colleges that you follow throughout college football, there's a few things that you need to know as the season moves on. Number one, defense always wins championships. It's never changed. It never will. You can have a great offense and a really bad defense, and you're not going to win a championship. You can win games. You can win 7, 8, 9 games, but you're not going to win a championship. You can have a average defense and a great offense, and you can win a championship. So you should be looking at that right now. You can have a great, phenomenal, unbelievable defense and have a really bad offense, and you're probably not going to win a championship. You might win your division, but you're probably not going to win the whole thing. You need to be at least average on offense. And I'm talking about the greatest example is the Georgia-Alabama deal. Alabama's great on defense. Alabama's also great on offense. Georgia is phenomenal on defense, but Georgia was below average on offense until they made that change at quarterback because of an injury. And I believe, as I said yesterday, Stetson Bennett is a special player, and he gives Georgia the best chance to win. So I thought today I would go into all the quarterbacks across the country that I have personally now seen and watched and analyzed on film, that who I think that they are special enough to give their team an edge, to give their team a chance to win a championship. And the qualifications I have for this are, for whatever reason, I was pretty damn good at coaching quarterbacks. I didn't play quarterback. I can't throw a ball 30 yards. I would have probably been the worst quarterback to ever play if I had played the position. But for whatever reason, I think because I learned to keep it extremely simple and to find out what somebody could do and then do what they can do and not worry about what I want to do as a football coach. You do what the quarterback can do. But for whatever reason, I've had at least 9 that I coached personally in high school, college, or in arena football that were players of the year. In other words, they were picked as the offensive player of the year or the conference player of the year in their state or in their conference. I coached the first pick in the NFL draft in Jared Goff that went on to play in a Super Bowl and to be an all-pro NFL quarterback. I've coached great high school players. I've coached great runners. I've coached guys that have ran for over 1,000 yards and thrown for over 2,000 in the same season. I've coached NCAA record holders. So I'll only tell you that just to let you know that my opinion is not the same as somebody that does this that doesn't really know what the fuck they're talking about. I do have a pretty good idea. I can watch film and evaluate. And it doesn't mean that I'm the best. It doesn't mean I'm not going to make a mistake, because I will make mistakes. I've made mistakes before as a coach in coaching quarterbacks. But with that being said, this is what I'm looking for. Can a quarterback win it with their arm? Just with their arm. They're so damn good that they can make throws that nobody else can make. Can a quarterback make it because he can extend plays? They're pretty good on offense, but when the O-line breaks down, he becomes Patrick Mahomes. He can run around, make people miss, buy time, scramble left, scramble right, and then make a throw to keep a play going or make a run to keep a play going. Or is he a special runner? He can rush for 600, 700, 800, 1,000 yards. When you have a quarterback that can do that and can throw for 2,500 to 3,000 yards, you have got an extremely difficult game plan for the defense to have to deal with. Or do you have somebody that's just a rare combination of a little bit of all these things, and they can find a way and figure out a way to win a game? So that's what I'm looking for when I do this. So these are the quarterbacks that right now in college football that I have seen and evaluated. They may be in the rival series that we're doing, of all these rivalry games that I'm analyzing every week, or they may also be somebody that played somebody in these rivalry series and I got to watch their entire game on college film where I could really truly break it down and analyze it. And the way that I would start off with, the most special player that I've seen so far is Bryce Young at Alabama. The reason is really good in the pocket, makes his offensive line look good when they don't look good, incredibly quick release, big time arm, great vision, can extend plays. And then obviously he has got phenomenal players around him and he can make every throw. They don't have to wait on him. If he needs to light one up and light it down the field 60, 65 yards, he can do that. If he needs to run, extend time, buy time, throw it across his body, he can do that. So right now he's the one guy out there that, because of his talent, I don't know who the next guy at Alabama would be, but I know this, if they're as good as him, then they're pretty damn good. And I know Alabama's in a run right now to where they're getting the best quarterbacks in the country every year. The second quarterback that I have seen that can win a game by extending plays and he has a phenomenal arm in release is Bailey Zapp at Western Kentucky University. He transferred in from Houston Baptist, and I'm going to tell you, I've seen him play twice now. He is special. He is NFL special. He can make the throws, doesn't have the best arm in the world, but he's got a really good arm. He's got a great rhythm to throw the screens. His RPO rhythm and release are unbelievable. He can make plays with his feet to keep plays alive. He can also make a great run in order to get a first down that they need to stay in a ball game. And I think he's got a big set. He's got a spine to where he ain't afraid to take chances to win a ball game. He is special. He gives Western a chance to win Conference USA. Even though I didn't think the rest of their guys were special, they played a lot better against Army, had a great chance to win that game at the end. And mainly, if they don't have him right now, they're just an average offense. With him, they're a special offense. So that's a huge deal. I got to watch a quarterback at Fresno State when they played Oregon, and he almost single-handedly was able to win that game. And that was Jake Haner. And I briefly mentioned him. He's a transfer from Washington. I worked him out when I was at Cal, and then I recruited him at Middle Tennessee, offered him a scholarship, and then at the end, he blew up, signed with Washington. And in the end, for whatever reason, didn't win the job up there, which I don't understand why, because he's damn good. And I can't imagine somebody being better than him. But he is a guy that can make Fresno State a group of five team that has a chance. They play UCLA this week. Jake has the opportunity to single-handedly end UCLA's run to try to be a Pac-12 team. So if you're a Pac-12 fan, you want to root really hard against Fresno, because Fresno State can beat UCLA. This kid is special. He can make every throw. He can keep plays alive. He's got a quick release. He has a great knack for filling the rush and escaping the rush at the last second. Matt Corrales at Ole Miss can win a game with his legs. He's fast. He can finish runs. He can make people miss. He's a damn good runner. He can also win with his arm. He's a special football player that gives Ole Miss a chance in the SEC to pull off a big upset against somebody like A&M, whose defense is good, or Alabama, that's just a great football team. If Alabama turned it over three times against Ole Miss, they might have a shot, because this guy is extremely special. Stetson Bennett, I talked about, gunslinger mentality. I believe in my heart, if Georgia made him the starting quarterback, Georgia is going to they're going to have a great chance to win the national championship. I just think he's special. I think he's unique. I think he's different. I just don't think he fits what Kirby Smart wants for a quarterback, because this kid will take chances. He's bold enough, and he believes that he can do some things, and he can. And that's how you beat Alabama. You don't beat them by being conservative. You beat them because you're going to have to outscore them in the end. The quarterback at Kentucky right now, Will Levis, he's got a special arm, but he can also run and extend plays. I love watching the new offensive coordinator at Kentucky. He is damn good. I talked about him yesterday, but he got the right quarterback in the transfer portal, and Levis has made Kentucky have a chance because they got good players. The offensive line is good. They're special. The running backs are run hard. They're not special in space, but they run hard. And then they've got the special receiver. But the QB there gives them a chance. And I don't know what they've got behind him. I would hate to see if he went down, because I don't think he's a guy that can win the game on his own. But I think he's good enough that if he doesn't play, I don't know if Kentucky can beat a good team. Kentucky can't beat Georgia unless Georgia turned it over three times and played conservative. But that can happen in a game. And so if Levis can stay healthy and all the other players at Kentucky can stay healthy, they would have a shot if Georgia turned it over that many times. Sam Howell was picked to be the first pick in the NFL draft. I've briefly talked about him. Big-time arm, can keep plays alive. I didn't think he played great The first game, the second game doesn't really matter. They played nobody. The first game, I didn't believe. I thought he got his eyes on the rush a little bit, so I'm going to be interested to watch him play a little bit more. I saw Carson Strong at Nevada play. He's the old classic, stand tall, 6'4 quarterback that's got a cannon on him and can make all the throws. So he's worth watching. He can win a game with his arm. And there's not very many guys that can do that anymore, but it's pretty hard to win a championship with a guy like that because they're going to have an off game. And when they do, I like a runner when you're having an off game. Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma, he's got good players around him. But again, I'm a little worried about him leaving the pocket. He didn't have to leave the pocket against Western Carolina because they were about 100 touchdowns worse than them. De'Eric King is a great runner. He's got a good arm, and he makes Miami have a chance to win. Miami's win against App State was a big win, believe it or not. App State is really good. For Miami to beat them, even though they're at home, App State is a damn good football team. And so that was a big win for Miami. And I thought coming back against Alabama, for them to win a close game like that, showed a lot of class and a lot of character for those guys. And De'Eric King can keep Miami in a game with his legs. He can also keep them in a game with his arm. The quarterback that played lights out was Anthony Brown at Oregon. The fact that he can run and make plays with his legs, their O-line is good, they've got good receivers, and the fact that Oregon won that game without their best pass rusher, their two best defensive players didn't play, makes that game even more special. Anthony Brown is a big guy that can make some plays. He's a special guy that, again, I think because he's such a good runner, I would hate for him to go out because I think that could end Oregon's seasons. UCLA's QB, he ran the ball incredibly well against UCLA as well as made some big-time throws. He is a hot and cold quarterback. I don't think he can drop back and win a game just throwing. But if they're running the ball well, he's always going to be able to throw it well enough off the play action and to make some big-time throws from that. I just don't think that he can drop back and throw it, but he's a damn good player. They would be hurting without him. Tulane's quarterback, Michael Pratt, I talked about him before. I think he's special. He can make plays with his legs. He can make plays with his arms. If he stays healthy, then they have a great opportunity to have a great season. And the other quarterback that I was really impressed with was Missouri's quarterback, Connor, and I don't know how you pronounce it, Basilick. Or Basilick, but anyway, whatever, how you pronounce his name, really good with his play action fakes, really good with scrambling, made a lot of plays with his legs. And again, I think that he's a guy that can win a close game for them by himself. So that's a large number of quarterbacks that I have seen this year that I have seen play in person. And those are guys that can help a team to win a game on their own. So keep that in mind as we go through the season. Obviously, I haven't seen every quarterback on my college film, and I'll continue to build this list and talk about them. Tomorrow, I'll start to dig in to the evaluation of the film of all the rivalry games, and over those next 3 days, we will dig deep into those rivalries and see how those games ended up. And after week two, I'll give a prediction for every single rivalry game again. Take care.
Thanks for listening to today's show. One, go to coachtf.com/podcast and leave us your email so we can send you your free download for our Pigskin Pocket Card, which gives you 10 simple steps to follow daily to ensure an amazing life. Two, do something good today for someone who can never repay you, and you'll have truly lived an amazing life. 3. Join us Monday through Friday for new episodes and download any of our episodes wherever you get your podcast or simply download from our coachtf.com/podcast. 4. Give us a 5-star review today so we can continue to put together entertaining and informative episodes. Always remember, do good, no repay.